Beautiful day for baseball. Great matchup today. Joe Musgrove, he of the no-hitter, and Kevin Gausman, the ace of the Giants today. Mike Farron joins us. Mike, of course, as I said, he's the co-host of SiriusXM's Power Alley on MLB Radio. Does some play-by-play for the D-backs. He is the pre- and post-game host as well. And I love listening to him. He is quick pitch for me in the morning. Mike, how are you?
I'm good, Marty. How are you?
I'm doing well. You did some work last night on the Diamondback broadcast, and I saw your tweet this morning. What happened at the end of the game?
I wish I could tell you. I don't know. I mean, I saw what happened on the final play. It's just the words didn't come out the way that you would want them to. There was a tapper with the bases loaded in the 10th and one out, a tapper between the mound and the first base foul line, and Stephen Crichton had to make a glove flip home to try and get Pete Alonso, and it was offline. And the only two words that came out right were dribbler and glove. So, most of us are fallible to some degree. But, yeah, it was one of those moments where, like, I knew in the moment that it was bad. Then I went back and listened to it, and it was even worse than I thought. So it's fine. It was funny.
Well, it's tough to do these games, being back in Arizona and the Diamondbacks are in New York. It's not simple to do these games.
No, well, that I don't think I can blame on the monitor because I saw the play clearly. But you're right. It is not it's not great. And it's especially tough, on radio, just because you're at the mercy of kind of two camera angles, whatever's going out on the TV and what is the all nine or high home. And in the case of what they have in New York, you can't see the corners. And it's not ideal. And I think the real downside to it is that I'm not sure the fans realize it, but they're the ones that are, I think, suffering a little bit from, the lack of access and information that we can get to, and the lack of clarity in what's happening in a game. And it takes a lot of the joy out of doing it, to be honest, because it's not the same as being at the ballpark and, having the energy of the crowd to give you an indication of how everyone is reacting.
Boy, very true. Hey, I talked about it earlier in my open today. Buster Posey, MVP of the league right now. But how about them Giants, as they like to say?
Well, I think I said a lot this winter that people shouldn't sleep on the Giants based on what they've done the last couple of years. I mean, they have been a largely competitive team while they've been trying to rebuild this organization. And they have excellent starting pitching. And I know the bullpen is still getting worked out, but that's something that, Farhan Zaidi and Scott Harris are going to work through as many options as they need until they kind of get that right. I think the resurgence of Buster Posey is one of the really great stories of the first, 5 weeks of this season. I mean, you're talking about a player who, in my estimation, is a Hall of Famer based on what his accomplishments have been, and because of what the accomplishments are at the position that he plays. And the last 3 or 4 years, we just had not seen anything that looked like this version of Buster Posey. It's clear that he's healthy. He's rejuvenated. And he's swinging the bat with authority. And I think it's one of the best storylines to come out of the first 5 weeks of the season is the performance of Posey.
Well, I agree with you. How about the hitting, though? Another no-hitter last night, and Wade Miley. And I love Wade Miley. Look, he gets the ball. He throws the ball. You better be ready when he's on the mound. But it's still Wade Miley. He's not going to knock you off the plate. And he threw a no-hitter against Cleveland, the second time they've been no-hit in a month.
I mean, Mark Burley had 2 no-hitters in his career, including a perfect game. So, I mean, I think that's part of the beauty of it, right, is that you don't necessarily need to be that overpowering guy to be able to have the no-hitter. That's a great performance. And listen, I mean, it's, 4 9-inning no-hitters and Bumgarner's 7-inning no-hitter? I mean, that's unprecedented. And I think, at least in the case of Miley and Bumgarner, you have guys that, aren't throwing 95, 96 miles an hour. So I think that's impressive. I mean, not that John Means really is either. I mean, Means touched 94 or 95, I think maybe once or twice in his start, but mostly it was his changeup that was so effective. So, you go out and pitch and you execute pitches and good things are going to happen. But you know, listen, I think we are in an era right now where hitters have to make decisions faster than they ever have before, because more guys are throwing harder than ever before, and they're throwing the fastball less than ever before. And for all the consternation of, well, these guys are all just swinging for the fences, to some degree, that's kind of all you can do. Run into one. It's right now, the fact that we have the highest average fastball velocity in baseball history, and I believe the lowest percentage of fastballs ever thrown, is probably a pretty good indication why offense is down.
Boy, amazing. Mike Farron joins us. Oh, I love talking ball with you. Let's talk a little National League West, though. And I said the Padres, and you and I texted earlier, and I heard your show when you talked about the Padres, and there's just something about them. There's something about them offensively that they just don't have it going. Starting pitching, excellent. They've had a million injuries. Their bullpen is still solid. But there's just something about the Padres that hasn't clicked yet.
Yeah, last in the majors, I think, in slugging percentage, right? And that mm-hmm. to me is really surprising. And, you know, when I saw them last year, one of the things that stood out was a huge increase in their ability to grind out at bats, right? They had been a free-swinging but somewhat talented group before last year. Last year, they were much more selective. They did not chase outside the strike zone. And I kind of felt like that it was very similar the first weekend of the season when I saw them. And then, about 10 days ago, they were in Phoenix for two. And they were swinging at everything. Now, some of that was they were facing two guys who throw a lot of strikes in Riley Smith and Merrill Kelly. But it was kind of shocking to me to see that. And I don't know if it was just a product of game planning or if they're going through one of those funks right now. And I do think that, at least when I saw them, Tommy Pham was out of the lineup. And while Pham's numbers haven't been great, he is one of the more selective hitters in baseball. I mean, he will really work in the bat. And I think he's pretty important to them because of that. But there are some things with them, yeah, that I just kind of go, okay, well, this is interesting. I mean, their walk rate's still relatively high, but it felt like it wasn't the same kind of quality of at-bats. Hosmer slowed down a little bit. Machado isn't off to a particularly great start, but I think that those numbers will end up being there in the end. Myers has been kind of in and out with a little bit of a knee issue. So there are probably better days ahead for their offense, but I am a little bit surprised that they are where they are. But the fact that them and the Mets are in the bottom five in slugging percentage in the majors is really stunning to me, and both those teams should be better offensively than that.
Well, Blake Snell, we saw him last night, four innings, a hit, and he walks six. And, Mike, I watch him pitch, and I'm sure you do as well. Great stuff. He just won't throw it over the plate.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's been kind of his M.O. I mean, you know, for all the talk about him getting pulled in the World Series and the seventh inning, like, one of the issues is that Snell's never really worked deep into games. He works deep counts. He throws a lot of pitches. He doesn't have particularly great command. He has, as you said, overwhelming stuff. And that's one of the things that you have to work with on him still. Now, granted, he's still a very young starter, and he doesn't have that many big league innings under his belt. I mean, it's only probably about, 450, so I'm guessing here, but probably 450, 550, somewhere around there. And we were actually just having this discussion yesterday about guys who take a while to develop their mm-hmm. command. I mean, Zach Wheeler was the same way, and now – you know, Wheeler is a much more efficient pitcher as he's gotten into his late 20s and early 30s. And I think that'll probably be the case with Snell, too. It's not that Wheeler has any less stuff. In fact, his fastball is probably better than it was a couple of years ago. He just has a better idea of how to pitch. And I think that's probably some of what Snell is still working through. The thing is, you're just waiting for it to click. You know what I mean? And when it does, it has a chance to be really spectacular.
Well, he did win a Cy Young. I mean, he has pitched mm-hmm. better. Just for some reason, he just can't get the ball over the plate. And you talk about the Phillies. They're playing great ball, and they've won, I think, five in a row, something like that. And all of a sudden, their pitching has turned around. Let me ask you about the bums from Brooklyn. Red flag yet for the Dodgers? They've lost 14 out of 18. How about that?
Did not see that one coming. I mean, really. I mean, listen, I think it's still the best team on paper in the National League. There are a couple things to keep an eye on with them. You know, they have gone through a lot of their starting pitching depth to this point. The Dustin May injury stinks for them, and it stinks for baseball fans. I mean, he's such a talented young pitcher. But they're going to get some reinforcement soon in Tony Gonsolin, and then, you know, probably David Price beyond that, that will help them in that regard. They've also been without Cody Bellinger. And in fact, I think outside of Toronto, no team has, and maybe it might even be, you know, even counting Toronto, that the Dodgers have lost the most projected production, you know, with wins above replacement for, to injuries of anybody to, so far this year. So they're going to get some of those guys back. I think that's going to make a difference for them. But they lack some of the veteran bench depth that they've had in the past. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I mean, Kike Hernandez and Jack Peterson weren't stars for them, but you kind of knew what to expect. And they're turning that over to younger players. And I don't think that's necessarily wrong, and those guys may end up producing. But there's probably going to be a little bit more fits and starts with the Zach McKinstrys and Noises and you know, Matt Beattie's in there with those guys. And they will keep playing until they find the guys that are the most productive in those spots. But I think that's one of the kind of subtle changes from the Dodgers last year to this year. Now, the year before, they had, what, three starters that they lost in the previous season, and it didn't seem to matter when they won the World Series last year. But it is something to kind of keep an eye on. That said, I mean, listen, they've lost 14 of 18. We've seen the Dodgers go through stretches like this in the past. My hope is that it's like 2018, where there's an actual race, where they play at the same level as the rest of the Western Division competition, and that there's an actual battle that goes on throughout the year, because that would make things a heck of a lot more fun.
I think there will be. You know, I always say when I open the show today, I said it in April and May, you figure out who you are. And that, mm-hmm. you know, we've only had 32 games. So you kind of get a feel who you're going to be. And is there that 10-game winning streak in there, the 10-game losing streak? And I think for the Dodgers, I'm not sure yet who they are because their bullpen is so unsettled, and the bullpen has killed them, really. And that's been a big problem. Now, continuing on that vein for just a second of April and May, who you are, who are the Diamondbacks? Do we know yet?
They're a little different than what I thought they were going to be. Decent starting pitching. Not great, but decent, although Bumgarner really seems to have turned a corner. His last four starts have been pretty good. Better offense than I anticipated. They do not go outside the strike zone very much. They have, with some of the young guys who have that plate discipline as kind of part of their repertoire, have helped that. But there have been some veteran guys that have become a little bit more selective. Estrubel Cabrera really, I think, leads the charge in that regard. And so they're going to make pitchers work. I mean, last night was an extremely frustrating loss for them, where they were 1-for-16 with men in scoring position. And this whole road trip, they're 3-for-44. But the thing is that they've had, through four games on this trip, 44 plate appearances with men in scoring position, or at-bats with men in scoring position. And that, I think, is part of what they're going to do. They're going to frustrate teams. They chase David Peterson, who's a strike thrower, historically, in the second inning last night. The bullpen is still a little unsettled. I think there's a little bit of bad luck in some of the results for guys like Kevin Ginkle in there. But I do think, and they just got Joaquin Soria and Chris Devinsky back. And so I think some of those roles are going to settle in a little bit. It's kind of an interesting team. They're kind of fun to watch. I think they're probably a little short on talent compared to at least the Dodgers and the Padres. They might be a little bit closer to San Francisco in that regard. But they're interesting, and I think in a lot of respects to this point, they've played better than what could have been anticipated. Now, they're a couple games under 500 after this, you know, they've dropped 5 or 6 now, but I think they'll be competitive throughout the summer, and I think the fact that their offense is better than I anticipated without Ketel Marte, who's their best player, does make them a little bit more interesting as the year goes on, and hopefully within the next couple of weeks, they'll get Marte back into the lineup.
Yeah, they look like a surprise team to me. I didn't see them being this competitive, but I agree with you. And Bumgarner, of course, is a shock for everybody after watching him in the last year or so. Were you shocked or surprised with that the Pujols situation came up, that he was released that way? And do you see him landing anywhere? Tony La Russa has already said not in Chicago.
Yeah, was I shocked in the way it happened? I guess a little bit, just because you're talking about one of the great players of all time being designated for assignment. You know, I grew up in Chicago, and I remember, and I kind of likened it to this right away, when Carlton Fisk broke the games caught record, a week later the White Sox released him in 93. They were in a pennant race They didn't. It was like late in June, you know, and they needed better production from catcher because they ended up winning the division that year, and it kind of stunk. Like, it was painful, right? Like, this is one of the great players in baseball history, a Hall of Famer, and so from that standpoint, absolutely. I think when you hear that, you know, Pujols was not willing to accept a reduced role, it starts to make more sense. I certainly understand that. Albert's an extremely proud player and has been a tremendous offensive player for most of his career. I mean, the first 11 years of his career are about as good as anybody. I think on a wins above replacement standpoint, only Willie Mays was better over the first 11 years of his career. So, and Mays played center field, so he gets a little defensive boost in the WAR calculations, whereas Pujols played mostly first. So, it's a bummer. I mean, it's a bummer. As to whether or not he ends up someplace else, the last 5 years, his production has been about 15% below league average. And of players who've gotten that same number or close to the 1,900 plate appearances, which is what he's had over those last 5 years, every other guy that's on that list is a middle infielder. And you're not going to get that production out of first base and DH. And so I think it makes it difficult based on the fact that he doesn't want to accept a reduced role to have him end up on a roster somewhere, because I'm just not sure how much he's going to provide. I hope he does, because I'd like to see him have a swan song, even if it isn't a weird uniform for Albert Pujols. But just in terms of production, it hasn't been there for a long, long time.
Yeah, it's tough to see a team really putting him in there to play the amount of time that he wants to play. So I agree with you on that. Maybe the A's, who knows? But I was surprised that Tony really closed the door on it with the White Sox. Let me ask you this.
Well, they don't have a spot for him. I mean, Mercedes has been their DH and has been really good.
He's hitting 800, and, of course, they got to let Abreu work out of it. So there's really no spot for him there. I love talking ball with you. As I said in the morning on Sirius XM, that MLB radio channel 89, that you and Jim Duquette do a great job of going around the league like this and filling in every day. So let me ask you this. In National League East, if you had to pick a winner right now, who would you pick in the National League East?
Well, I'm going to pass on that one, Marty. It's way too early for us to start picking winners and look at it. I mean, I don't even look at the standings really for another month. I mean, I think one of the things that's interesting to me is that the only team that's outscored their opponents in that division, at least going into play last night, is Miami. And that definitely gets my attention, because their pitching is very, very good. Mm-hmm. But it's going to be a tight division. And all of those teams, I believe, are more flawed than we thought they were coming into the year. And it should lead to a pretty exciting race, but I don't know that I can handicap it right now. I mean, I think I'd have to move. I picked Atlanta before the season started, so I think I probably at this point would have to stay with it. But get back to me after Memorial Day, and I might have a change of
thought. I agree. I agree. The first couple of months, I say, as I said before, you see who you are. But the way I see the National League, I think there's races in every single division, and I think we're heading for a very good year.
Yeah, I think there certainly is parity in the National League. I think that's absolutely true. And I think you're right that there are a number of teams, maybe with the exception of Colorado and Pittsburgh, that you feel like have at least some semblance of a chance of getting hot and putting themselves into the mix. And I think that's exciting, or at least it should be exciting for fans, that most every station in the league has a chance to make the postseason. We'll see how it plays out over the next month or so to see if anybody else kind of falls by the wayside. But as of right now, I agree. I think really sport-wide, there's a fair amount of parity. Maybe some of it's because teams didn't do a whole ton to try and improve their rosters over the course of the winter, or a lot of teams didn't do a lot to improve their rosters. But as of right now, it's pretty open field.
Yep, I agree. Good first 6 weeks of the season. Mike, thanks for taking the time to be on with us today, and you're always a welcome guest, and I enjoyed talking ball with you.
Anytime, Marty. Good to catch up.
Okay, that is Mike Farron. You can hear him Monday through Friday, Sirius XM, Channel 89, on that Power Alley show, and the guy knows baseball.